Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children. Today we have a fabulous guest with us. Talia Zamora is an award-winning coach and best-selling co-author, known for uplifting women from neurodivergent families. With her unique approach, Talia helps clients find balance, clarity, and direction in their lives. I think we could all do with some of that. In this episode, we'll dive into Talia's journey of becoming a coach, the common struggles faced by neurodivergent families, and her insights on redefining success. So whether you're looking for practical tips or a dose of encouragement, this episode is for you.
Welcome to the podcast, Talia. It's great to have you here with us today.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Can you start by telling us what inspired you to start your coaching journey and how your personal experience helped to shape your approach?
My coaching journey probably happened by accident. What I mean by that is that it wasn't really a lifelong dream to work for myself and to be a coach. I'd been working in business improvement and continuous improvement. Within industry, there's something called Lean Six Sigma, and it's about practicing different ways and systems and processes to improve your business and make it easier and manage it well. I came to an end of a contract and I was struggling to find something that would fit around my kids because, as you know, your kids have more need for hospital appointments and for you to pick them up from school because they don't necessarily want to go to the clubs and they get exhausted and burn out and they need to be at home. So I really needed something part-time and flexible. So at the end of the contract I was on, I just thought, okay, let's see, give myself a bit of a break to be there for the kids and then retrain as something that I can do for myself. So it took a few months. I got myself a coach and then was talking to her about what would be best to do with my skills. And that's when it highlighted that actually being a coach would work well for me because of all the business improvement and continuous improvement that I'd got. And in the background, at the same time as I was starting to train as a coach, I was doing quite a lot of training for my kids. So as, again, you might well know, the system when you get your kids diagnosed, because both of mine are autistic, at the time I hadn't had a diagnosis. So the system suggests that you go to parenting courses, which at the time I got really annoyed about and didn't see the logic and thought that, you know, I'm not a bad parent, are you judging me? But actually realised very quickly how valuable they were and how amazing it was that somebody understood, other people were in the same boat, that there were certain quirks about my kids that I hadn't even realised were quirks, and their traits were shining through that became quite prominent, that actually it wasn't normal for everybody else. Within the first 2-3 years of coaching, it then became quite clear that I was working with a lot of neurodivergent women without advertising that I was neurodivergent and without saying, this is me. It just became almost magnetic slightly. I know that might sound a bit funny, but it's just that was who I was attracting without deliberately doing it. So it came to a point where I'd done so much training and was looking to do more. And I thought, actually, this is a good time for me to become a neurodivergent coach. And at the same time, I started training with a charity called Advance, who's local to me in Hertfordshire. And they support mainly ADHD and autistic families. So I particularly trained with them. So I coach with them as a charity, and that's family coaching, and directly through my own business that's more female business focused, and that's with women who've got neurodivergent traits themselves or diagnosis, but also have a family at home that they're having to build their life around.
So through your working with neurodivergent women, what are some common struggles that you see?
Common struggles are actually about life itself. It's in terms of how you navigate with your children. A lot of the time I feel as a parent of autistic kids that we try and do things that everybody else is doing. And we do that with ourselves and our children. So be it that going to parties as an adult, it's taken me a while to realize actually there's certain types of parties I like to go to, but normally previously I just pushed myself to do it. It's the same with kids. There are only certain types of parties they might feel comfortable going to. And then also things like swimming lessons or going to football or going to ballet or things like that. We think it's the norm and that we should be doing it with our kids, and we kind of try and coax them into doing it, and they don't want to do it, and they're kicking up a stink and having a tantrum or coming home and quite distressed. So I think one of the hardest things when I'm working with someone is that to help them to realize that they need to do it their way, and it's okay if that's not what everybody else is doing, and that it's really important to have to be regulated at home and in a nice way and feel comfortable. So especially with extracurricular stuff where we've got a choice, whereas school we don't have as much choice, so that can be a challenge in itself. So I think helping people to realise they don't have to fit into the social norms of society is huge.
I think that is huge, isn't it? Just thinking from like my son and the expectations that we had for him before he had his diagnosis, like parties, as you were saying, are they awful? And school trips, things like that, that which he couldn't actually access. And just as a parent, parenting him, that took me a little bit of an adjustment to actually be able to say, no, actually, that's not going to work. No, that isn't. But you're very caught up with what's expected. I think for a good long
Yeah,
time.
we've talked about this more recently, haven't we, with the summer holidays and seeing the adverts for festivals or family days out. And we were sort of in that place where you think, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And then you think, no, it wouldn't. That would not
It
fit for us. It's in
happens to
that.
me a lot. I totally understand that. It's so true. It's quite often I will, previously anyway, I will book things, take my kids to them, and then just feel so disappointed that, oh, why are you not enjoying it? Why is this not working? Everybody else is having a great time. They've been here for hours and then you want to go home already. So I think it takes a really long time to wake up and think, actually, I don't have to keep on doing this. And I don't, especially when it comes to really expensive things like taking your child to the theatre or to a circus or something, and they're really distressed about it. I think it really takes a long time to realise, oh, yeah, this is not working. Why am I doing it?
Yeah, exactly. I think I see things and I think, actually, am I thinking of it from it's something I would like to do or is it something they would like to do? And often it's me. So, yeah, it's not going to work for them. So,
But it's also
yeah.
you mirroring what other people are doing and thinking, okay, they're doing it, so I'll do it, and this is going to be fun. It's having that realization that, oh, I don't need to do it that way, I can do it my way. I think that really does help.
Yeah, would agree, definitely.
You talk about momentum over balance. Can you explain a little bit about what that means, especially for neurodivergent families?
It took me again a while to realize that I'm thriving for balance. There's all this, it's quite normal to hear people saying work-life balance, need to get a work-life balance. And one of the reasons I started working for myself is because I wanted a work-life balance. But does balance, especially in a neurodivergent family, does that really exist? I mean, are we thriving for something that's not really actually doable? Because from my own experience, a lot of things change very quickly. So you might get your kids into a club and you might get them into going to a tutor or extra learning. And you might get in the flow for maybe a couple of months of doing certain things, whether it's swimming or ballet or something like that. And then it switches. They're done very quickly, especially if you've got an ADHD child. They potentially could get quite bored very quickly. It's like if it's not fast-paced enough, they're going to be like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Can I do something else? And I'm one of those parents that change my child's sport literally every term because they'd got fed up. Like, okay, we'll do volleyball now. Okay, we'll do football. Okay, we'll do badminton. And we just changed all the time. So it made me realize actually, momentum is probably more of what I'm doing, is keeping going, not necessarily keeping a balance, but I'm just keeping going at a nice pace and for me and my family. And that's also come through identifying that actually I need to do what's right by my family and not right by what everybody else does. So it came to the point of dropping some of the extracurricular things, thinking, why are we doing this? We just kept the momentum and at the speed that was good for us instead of what could happen is that you hit a wall and you just stop everything, and there is no balance because, you know, foods and having a good diet as such will go out the window. Sleep goes out the window. You know, you're working too many hours, and obviously that's not great either. But I just think that sometimes it can go up and down, especially school holidays. If you're working for yourself, actually, that can look very, very different in terms of the work hours in comparison to the hours with the kids. So
Yeah.
I feel like momentum's more realistic for me anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. So, what kind of breakthroughs have you seen with the clients that you work with?
Some of the biggest breakthroughs are seeing clients realize that they can communicate and do things in a different way that they've been trying to. Whether that be in a work situation or a workshop situation or going to a meeting or doing a presentation, or whether it's with your kids and your family at dinner time or picking them up from school or having a chat with the teachers at the gate or anything like that. I'm encouraging them to drop the mask slightly and do it from more of a natural place that they're comfortable with. To watch what they're saying in terms of jumping in and saying, yeah, my kids will come to the park on the weekend, and then thinking to yourself, how are we going to do this? Like, that's not realistic. We can't get out of the house at 9 o'clock in the morning. So communicating that actually what your needs are, that actually that doesn't work for me, but maybe we could do it at 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. And then when it comes to meetings and talking to people, saying, actually, can you slow down a little bit? My processing is not as fast, or just saying, I didn't catch that. Taking care of yourself so you don't have to stress later that actually, I didn't hear half of that meeting and missed it. Also, taking care of yourself instead of in terms of the boundaries for work, whether it's you work for yourself or for an employer, like cutting off in the evenings and not doing any more, if that works for you, or if you're an evening person, making sure you've got time in the middle of the day to have a break and rest, not overloading your day. Whereas it's very easy to put so much in your day, thinking, oh, I'm going to do an appointment, I'm going to get the shopping done, get the laundry done, pick up the kids, have a meeting. You put it all in there, and then you get to the end of the day and get so deflated that, oh, I didn't know half of that, and like, I really need to still have that meeting with so and so. So being really realistic and communicating to people, actually, you know what, I haven't got that much time today, but tomorrow would be better. And checking in with yourself and making sure that actually that you're not overdoing it. I think that's a big thing in terms of releasing people from actually feeling like they're not doing enough and overdoing things and not setting boundaries and actually saying, you know what, it's okay. You can do less. Less is more, I often say, is that you're more productive and you can get things done in a much better way if you're not spinning plates all the time.
That's really good. That's really good tips. It's something I do far too much, particularly on a Monday, like try and fit that whole to-do list on the Monday, and actually it can be spread through the week.
It's so
Anyway.
true, isn't it? I mean, there's an element of satisfaction if you do manage to get it done, but the drop in your adrenaline when you haven't got much of it done is worse. So, yeah, it's much better to cut it down a bit. I also tell people to do a done list because quite often, if you don't get everything done on a Monday, for instance, and you're disappointed in yourself, I'm sure if you wrote a done list next to it of all the things that weren't written on your to-do list, you'd see how much more you did actually get done.
I like that
Yeah.
idea. I'm going to do a done list.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
that's a
really
really good tip.
satisfying, especially because you could tick it afterwards if you're one of those people that gets motivated by ticking.
I
Oh,
really
yeah, I
do.
am.
Yeah.
So yeah, you two could even swap done lists with each other. What have you done today? Like, what have you
That's true.
achieved?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, sometimes I even add stuff on just so I can tick it off, you know?
Yes,
Did that.
exactly. Yeah,
Did
exactly. It's so satisfying.
that. Yeah. So, what's one small shift that listeners can make today to move closer to the life that they want?
When it comes to with family, it's stepping back a little bit, taking your foot off the pedal a little bit, listening to the people around you, especially your kids. We quite often get stuck in this mode of, like I mentioned, being normal and sticking to what everybody else does and thinking we have to do it that way, we have to do it that way. Like, for instance, when I was switching from being employed to working for myself, starting my own business, in my head, I kept on saying, I can't do that. I've got to provide for my children. I've got to pay my mortgage. And that was my mantra in my head. But actually, it's like all the things you're telling yourself that you can't do, and even with your kids, I can't let them stay on the screen for 3 hours. I can't let them not do their homework. I can't not go to that party. I can't not go to that meeting. Stop and think, what would happen if you didn't? What could you do differently? So I stopped, and for me, I actually took a payment holiday on my mortgage so that I could not stress about that, because that was the can't that I kept on telling myself that I can't do. And it's the same with, we can't get to school every day at 9 o'clock. Okay, if you really can't do that, go to school and tell them we're coming in at 10. If that is so much of a stress and it's stopping your child from wanting to go to school, then just think about that can't and what could you do differently. We tell ourselves and give ourselves a hard time sometimes where maybe there's another way.
Yeah, it's really easy, isn't it, to get fixed on I have to do, I have to do, I have to do without questioning, do you? Yeah.
Absolutely. And most situations where my kids say to me, I can't do that, I often, and they probably get very irritated, say, there's no such thing as can't. You can just do it a different way, in a way that suits you.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Now, you have a really generous gift to share with our listeners. You are a 101 neurodivergent traits download. Could you talk about
Yes.
that, please?
So I often have people saying, am I autistic? Am I ADHD? And then we talk about the different traits that they're experiencing. And then you maybe come up with 10 or 20 of them. And I often say, it doesn't necessarily make you ADHD, but it sounds like there's a lot of traits you've got going on. I do find that actually it can be quite confusing because there's so many things. And there's a lot of things that we don't actually pick up on and realize about ourselves that we've been doing for years. And that is glaringly obvious to some, but not to yourself. So I've got so many that I've talked about with clients and with my own family. I just started collecting them. And it just got to the point where I think, well, actually, I've got this long list. It wasn't 101 at the time, by the way. I had to do a bit of research to get to some of them. But I did get to the point where I had a long list and I thought, actually, maybe I can make this into something that people can use. So it's not a checklist. And I am not somebody that does diagnosis at all. I'm not qualified for that. But just think sometimes if you're a little bit sh unsure, especially if you're a late person in discovery, and a lot of us mums can be, because you focus on your child, you get that diagnosis, and then you think, oh, hold on a minute. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it? So then you start picking up on things yourself. And then you go through this process of, do I have it? Don't I have anything? Is there something going on? So I just thought having a list where you could read through it and think, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's me. Yes, that's me. Yes. And you get to a point where you've got quite a few, you might think to yourself, maybe I should look into this a little bit more. But it's slightly validating when you've got this list of not what you'd find on the NHS as such. If you looked up NHS, you'd get a dozen of things, but you're not necessarily going to get the minor, little, tiny things. So I just thought it might be helpful to people just to have a bit of clarity.
That
Oh,
sounds so
yeah.
useful.
Yeah, I'd love to have a look at that. I'm at that place where I'm like, am I, aren't
Yeah.
I?
So yeah, the list is not going to help you get diagnosed necessarily, but it might just give you some clarity, thinking, yeah, I do that. Yeah. I do that. And a lot of the things that you might read, you think, oh, I hadn't even considered that. I thought everybody did it. But when you collect a bunch of things together, as you two probably know, then it kind of starts forming into something, whether it's ADHD or autism or OCD or whatever it might be. But some people might look at it and think, there's only about five or six things on here that I can relate to. And that's totally normal because there are certain things that there's lots of overlap with the neurotypical world. But if you get a collective, it might make you think, oh, okay, that makes a bit more sense now.
If anyone's listening and thinking, oh, how do I work with Talia? Can you talk about that? How people can work
Yeah,
with
of
you?
course. Thank you. So, one of the ways I mentioned briefly is that I work for a charity and do family coaching. I do a little bit of family coaching, not through the charity, but if you come to me directly, or do family sessions, but also I can do business. So, mums like yourselves that are running your own business, that are having to deal with family dynamics at home, helping you to kind of put processes and strategies and systems in place that are going to suit you, making like little tiny marketing strategy for that you can do within a week, like an hour a week type thing, so that it's not something that spends you have to spend hours and hours on, and just help keep your business rolling. It doesn't necessarily mean that I help women in business to grow to a massive scale. I have had quite a few clients that have done that, but a lot of it's about just setting boundaries that work to keep your business ticking. it to the point that you can take the half term off and actually there's stuff happening in the background and it's not a problem, and that you feel comfortable that everything's under control and that you're not scattered all over the place. The family side of it is helping them in terms of communication, helping with understanding what they can and can't ask for at school, helping with bedtime routines, with food and identifying what's going on if there's challenges there, or communication with your kids. And a lot of kids, for instance, have challenges in terms of being told, no, you can't do something like that, or they'll have challenges with friendships and being sociable and making plans and initiating things, and they were quite sensitive around that. So it will be about what can we do slightly differently. And when I say slightly, sometimes it's even down to the colour of the light bulb in the bedroom, just to change the atmosphere and make it a little bit warmer and more softer to go to sleep. Or it could be about having a little tent, a sensory tent in the kid's bedroom, or even as an adult, having a sensory tent for you to have a break at lunchtime. So there's lots of little things that can make a massive impact, and that can build both types of client that I work with. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, everybody's neurodivergent, so finding ways that can help them.
And you mentioned that you're running a retreat soon.
Yeah, so I've got a mini retreat, you could call it, a well-being day, a neurodivergent friendly well-being day, which is called Unmask and Unwind, and it's in Harpenden, which is near me, Hertfordshire. It's a small group for women and helping them just to unwind for the day. We're running a well-being workshop. We're also doing a bit of yin yoga. We've got a chef coming in with a really nice nutritional meal, and then we're going to do a little tiny bit of getting to know each other and connecting with each other, but in a safe space that you can trust, it's not going to go elsewhere. But just giving space, really, because quite often women, especially if you've got neurodivergent kids, you don't necessarily get that space to unwind and to be yourself and to be with peers and just to relax for a day and come away a little bit more refreshed with a bit of clarity is the idea. So fill
Sounds
your cup
brilliant.
up, you know. Yeah.
Sounds great.
That's, yes, thank you. So that's on the 19th of October. So it's quite soon.
Brilliant. And where can listeners go to connect with you?
I have a website, taliazamora.com. So you'll find my coaching details on there, but also the well-being day, also the 101 download is also on there. Also, there's lots of podcasts that I've done previously, as well as this one will be on there soon, that I've got on there. So if they want to hear more about my story and my kids and my family and my coaching, then they can listen to other podcasts that I've recorded too.
Sounds
Brilliant.
great. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so
Thank
much for
you.
coming on today and talking to us and sharing all your tips and knowledge. It's been really great to talk to you.
You're welcome. It's been great to talk to you. Great to meet you. So thank you very much for making the space for me to come.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast. We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it. And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com. Until next time, take care.